Good evening.
Good evening.
When our mind is in practice, it is very pure and very natural. And it can be that way, our mind can be that way when it is unperturbed. Like when you go for a hike in the mountains and you come across a stream that is clear, no pollution, it flows easily, clean and life-giving. You feel the stream is clean and life-giving, not polluted by something. Not polluted by something extra that can create poison. This is the mind of practice. And this something extra that can poison a stream or poison our mind, this something extra is activity, the activity of grasping. When the mind is no longer unperturbed, when the mind is upset by a desire or some kind of expectation or ambition, then there is some pollution, something creating pollution to our pure and natural stream of mind. So too often we try to gain something from our practice, even though we may not be aware of it. We often are hoping and trying to gain something from our practice, and when that happens, the mind feels separate from the body. The mind is separated from the body. It is as if the mind is trying to make the body a slave. In other words, when we try to get something from our practice, it's like the mind is saying to the body, you take this posture so that I can get enlightenment. Separate. So that I can get enlightenment, or I can get freedom, or I can have wisdom or peace of mind or something. Whenever we want to get something like that from our practice, we separate ourselves from the body. And then the body feels, well, this posture is not comfortable. This posture is uncomfortable. Why should I do this for you? So the body resists what the mind wants it to do, and the body and mind are at war. And this happens when we want to gain something from our practice. And actually, it's not the body and mind at war with each other. Actually, it is the mind is at war with itself. And this is not, of course, not spiritual practice to sit that way, wanting something from it and being at war. That is the opposite of practice. opposite, because there is disharmony between body and mind. Separation and isolation, alienation, whatever we want to call it, all created because we are wanting something. So body and mind become separated, but it also affects our relations between ourselves and the rest of the world. When we want something, we become alienated. It is when the body and mind are separate or feel separate that people will give up the practice. That's what really causes people to give up practice. There is a separation. So they quit the practice because of the feeling of discouragement. The feeling is, this doesn't work, or it's not giving me what I want. But the discouragement that we feel is not the fault of some it. No, it isn't giving me what I want. There is no it. Okay. Discouragement is not the fault of it. Discouragement arises because there is a problem of misunderstanding and a problem that comes from desire. So as we constantly say and we constantly read, and that the point of the practice is not to attain something, even relief of stress. And like Suzuki Roshi said over and over again, don't have a gaining idea. So our practice is how we can go beyond the desires of our ordinary everyday self. Practice is to go beyond all that. Even beyond the experience that you have in sitting. If you have a really nice feeling when you sit, go beyond that too. And go beyond the scriptures, and go beyond ideas of Zazen, and go beyond enlightenment, beyond Zen, beyond Buddha. Go beyond. And at the end of the Heart Sutra, we chant, gone, gone, gone beyond. Go beyond means don't have any idea of such ideas. Let these ideas and desires dissolve like a vapor, and simply return to our posture and to our breath. And when we can go beyond like that, then we return to the oneness of body and mind. And so there is no alienation. So if the sitting is going well, feels comfortable, feels right, you don't feel impatient, you don't feel bored, it's good. And if you have some experience in your sitting practice and you say, oh, this is it, and you feel it is something special, that experience is not anything special. It is only some kind of excitement. This is it. Oh boy. Be careful. It is only some kind of excitement. As Suzuki Roshi called it, the art of Zen. It is the art of Zen, not Zen itself. It's as if we go to the Asian Art Museum and see all the beautiful paintings and scrolls and say, oh, that's Zen. That's Zen, that's it. Mistaking the beautiful paintings for Zen is not, it's a mistake. So to understand what the practice is, it's okay to admire this artwork. They're beautiful and they're inspiring, and we wish we could do just as good. It's okay to admire them and be encouraged by them, but it's necessary to devote ourselves completely to our practice to really get to the marrow of Zen. And we can get to the marrow of our practice without dreaming and without wishing and without complaining. We have to set all that aside. The body and mind need to be engaged in one practice. Body and mind in one practice. That way the mind will not wander off. The mind will not wander off, and physical discomfort will not create emotional problem. So if you have, make it a point to have the right posture, the straight back, look straight ahead, keep your eyes down, shoulders back. If we make the effort to have right posture, we let the mind join the body. It's a mistake for the mind to think, okay, body, you take a good posture, and I'm going to go for a trip. You stay there, I'm going out. But this is what we do, you know, without realizing it. So when we put our body in the right posture, then the mind should join it and be one with it. And not go for a boat ride. So we need to continually purify our intention to have pure practice, to keep the stream free of pollution, which means letting go of all desires. And Suzuki Roshi, in one of his talks, he said, even though you attain enlightenment, you should not try to have that same experience again. No clinging, no desire. If we do try to repeat some pleasant experience that we had in our practice, this is not the right practice. This is a grasping mind. But when we let that go, when we just let our mind flow, in other words, when we practice with the pure intention, the mind will become subtle and flexible and see many things that it did not notice before. And it will give up clinging to a single point of view or a single belief. And we'll just be ready to accept things as they come. And also accept things as they are. When the mind is not grasping and the mind is not clinging, it will be like a quiet pool of water or a clear stream. And moment by moment, it will reflect whatever appears. Reflect everything without distortion. You know, a clear pool does not have its own permanent face. When you look in a clear pool of water, you see your face. If somebody comes after you, then that's the face. It reflects. The pool of water does not have its own private face. It reflects all images without distortion. Of course, it's usually kind of hard to have this kind of soft mind. And that's because we are human and we have our stubbornnesses. We want to hold on to the image of a face, some kind of comforting image of ourself, of our ideas and our beliefs. And in particular, we hold on to how we want the world to see us. If we cling to this kind of mind in our practice, we eventually will become discouraged. This stubborn clinging will lead to discouragement and leaving the practice. Most people who start the actual sitting practice, you know, who go beyond the books and the artwork and the ideas and lectures, most people who start the practice will quit because of disappointment or discouragement. Discouragement based on some kind of expectation of attaining something. Hope to get something out of it. And when it doesn't happen, when they feel it doesn't happen, they leave and say, well, that experiment didn't work. So, some months ago, I got a call. It was a call on our answering machine that I returned the call. And a woman had called and she said, is your library open to the public? And so I explained, well, it's for our members only. And she was very disappointed. And if she asked if other Zen centers allowed the non-members to use their library. She did not ask about practice. She only asked about the books. And this is not unusual. It's easy to read and to learn about Buddhism and Zen through books and seminars, lectures. But knowing about the philosophy of the teaching or knowing about the practice, that doesn't help. Knowing intellectually doesn't help. This is collecting the art of Zen. This is admiring the art of Zen. It's like storing away food in your refrigerator. If you don't use it, it doesn't help. To use the food or to use what you gather, that will help. To put it into practice. So it's kind of foolish to have a storing away practice. We store away bits and pieces of knowledge or information or images or experience. Just store them away. It's foolish to think that if I collect all these things and store them away, that's practice. We cannot practice by storing away ideas. We have to do it, actually do it, like You do. You have to do it. Body and mind together actually has to practice. So we don't put too much emphasis on the art of Zen or the storing away part of Zen. It's okay, not wrong, but it's not the practice. So to practice in its actual true sense, we need determination and we need a pure attitude. If you are going to have a consistent, continual sitting practice, you have to have determination to do it. So our practice is not about reading the great books to learn something useful or to learn something interesting. Our practice is not about having an exciting experience. It's not that reading the books or attending seminars are bad. They're not bad activities. But our attitude has to be unselfish. In other words, our mind needs to have a kind of message that says, I will continue practice whatever happens or however I feel, independent of whatever experience I have. And with this, when we have that kind of attitude, then the mind can be flexible and we can dissolve all of our expectations. So the practice that we do today, it's not exactly monk's practice, because we are not living like monks in the monastery, but the practice itself is based on the monastic way of life. Always been that way from the beginning, from Buddha's day. The community of monks, the Sangha, lived together in the monastery and they shared responsibilities. They didn't worry about economics. Time was set aside during the day for Zazen, and there were no distractions. And they could not voluntarily stay away from the Zendo. Together, as a group, they went to Zazen together. And the monks in a monastery can do that, but we can't. If you live in the everyday world, where there is economics, and jobs and responsibilities, that's pretty hard to do. Many responsibilities, many distractions. And so even though our practice is based on monastic model, it's hard. It's hard for us. And so if we want to practice, we have to make an extra effort. We have to discipline ourselves and motivate ourselves. Nobody will come around in the morning and make sure you're up and in the Zendo. Nobody will do that for you. only we can do it. I won't call you and you won't call me to see if we're up. You have to motivate yourself. In the monastery, someone provides this kind of discipline and the monks have no choice. But all of us have a choice in the morning. You can come to practice or you can not. You can continue or you can quit. And many reasons may arise that want to pull you back from going to practice. And some of those reasons are valid and real, and some are not. So we need a strong determination to continue when we are on our own. But we should ask ourselves, do we want self-discipline or do we want other discipline? Discipline provided by somebody else. So our practice here that we are developing in this country, you know, will be stronger than monastic practice, because each of us will have to develop that kind of determination on our own. So the determination in our practice means to focus on what is really important and reject the frivolous, and to know the difference. So this practice is about emphasizing opening our eyes to what is substantial and what is pure, and to recognize what is frivolous, and to stay with the practice means we will not allow ourselves to be distracted, and we will not be overwhelmed by a storing away practice, a practice of collecting. In other words, we should not exchange a glass of water for a glass of sweet and sparkling soda, although the water seems quite ordinary and boring, and the soda seems quite exciting. We shouldn't trade a glass of water for a soda just because the soda tastes exciting. We should remind ourselves that pure water is life. And our practice should be just like that. Simple and clear and boring, but life-giving. This is the simplicity and the beauty of our practice. So, are there any questions tonight?